you for seeing me, Sorica, and rejoicing in me. And it's quite moving to hear people speak about you. It's quite interesting. When I got ordained and my friends asked me what my name meant, she whose essence is stainless and pure, they said, oh, you really have been reborn, and you've done it for us too, thanks. So they carried on partying. So it was interesting with the third precept, because, you know, we decided that we would have talks, six talks, and we would do two each. And it came to the third precept, and both Bodhi Leela and Sarika said, I don't want to do that. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And it's interesting, actually, just reflecting on it. And when I started working on it, when I came here, I thought, oh, gosh, actually, maybe it was appropriate for me to do it, because one of the jobs that I've done is enabling school children to protect themselves against sexual harassment and sexual assault. So that's been part of my work practice, and hadn't really put the two together. And actually, you know, I kind of think, well, actually, sexual misconduct is so much part of a woman's life, because we're often the target of sexual misconduct. So before I go into my talk, I just wanted to just say a few things about me and my practice with the precepts. For me, the fundamental stage for the path of freedom for me is investigating the negative precepts thoroughly. I really believe in that. It was interesting, because I used to come along to retreats at Tara Loka. It was a big part of my life, and I'd go home and say yes, you know, and I'd go home and I wasn't a mitra, but I'd recite those positive precepts, you know, and they're all very poetic and flowery, and, you know, and I'd be lulled into them. And there was one retreat I went on, and it was about setting up the conditions, and it really touched me. And I kind of thought setting up the conditions was the external, you know, how could I, you know, change things in my life. And I went home, and I was reciting the positive precepts with deeds of loving kindness. I purify my body, and, you know, with mindfulness clear and radiant, I purify my mind. And then I woke up and I thought, you know, I've spent like 4 or 5 years saying these things, but not much has happened. I'm a bit happier. I was a lot happier, but not much had really happened in my relationship to the precepts. And I thought, hold on a minute, why don't I actually chant the negative ones in English too and see what happens? And, you know, it was just it was just like magic beginning to work in my life when I began to recite the negative ones daily in my life. So in a way, when I was thinking about this, it's great, because I work with young people, and often you ask them not to do something and they say, sorry. And you say to them, so what are you going to be doing 5 minutes later? I'm still going to be doing it again, miss. And I say, exactly. And in a way, for me, it was like when I was just doing the positive precepts, it was my sorry, but I wasn't really thinking about the actions I was doing. And so what's really interesting is that actually it's the five negative precepts which connect all Buddhist traditions together in the lay tradition. It's not the positive ones. Sangha Ratchita wrote those positive ones for us to help us to be compassionate. Thich Nhat Hanh has actually written positive ones. They're different, so to help us be compassionate. But it's the five negative ones which connect all Buddhist traditions together. You know, so for me, when I was really thinking about that, I was really thinking about the Buddhist tradition of confession, and I see the negative precepts as the first stage of confession. That's when we acknowledge and we have regret. We acknowledge our actions and we have regret. And that's a really important part. Then, through acknowledging our actions and through the regret, that kind of a more compassionate thing can come through when we reflect on it. You know, that we, you know, we reflect that perhaps we've harmed life, and actually through that we begin to think of the positive precept, which is with deeds of loving kindness I purify my body. And in a sense, for me, the positive precept is the second stage of confession, which is amends, where we begin to make amends. So next, that's not enough. You know, so many times, you know, you hear people, you know, we think of addiction and people say, I'll never do it again, and I promise I won't do it again, I won't do it again. And, you know, 6 months later they are doing it again, and we know it can have a huge impact on people's families. And part of the reason why is that they haven't made the plan. What's the plan? So, you know, it's so we can have remorse, but what are we going to do about it? What's the plan? What's the plan we're going to do to enable us that we don't repeat the same behaviour again? So it's, yeah, so for me, the negative precepts is the beginning of a process, and there has to be a process if we don't want to continue repeating the same behaviour. So, and also that practice of confession we can do, and many of us do, in the Triratna, do it in the presence of our shrine. We do it in the presence of the Buddha, if we have the Buddha, or if we have Tara, we do it in the presence of our shrine. Sometimes we do it in the presence of a trusted person. Sarika, when she introduced me, said we're both in a chapter together. And so sometimes we confess our actions in a chapter so that people witness us. And so there are many ways of actually doing that process of confession. So, yeah, I really do believe that if we begin to recite those negative precepts in English daily, that actually some of those habits, some of those unskillful actions that we've been doing will begin to drop away. Because if we're saying it daily, it has an impact on your mind. It has to. You know, there's something that we say in Buddhism is guard the sense doors. Be aware of what films you watch, and be aware of what you're reading. I know that if I read the Metro daily, that it's going to impact my dreams, okay? It just goes into my consciousness. It has an impact. I know that if I listen to unskillful stuff around other people, it has an impact on me. And so therefore, it makes sense that if we repeat those negative precepts daily, that they will begin to have an impact. Okay. So, I did write my talk. I'm not one of those people who can just have these reminders and know what they're going to do. So, my talk is scripted, but I may come off the script. So, I begin with, for the cultivation of mental development, sila is considered the most important step on the spiritual path. Without morality, right concentration, the sixth stage on the Noble Eightfold Path, cannot be attained. Similarly, wisdom cannot be fully perfected. So there are no shortcuts with the practice of the precepts. We have to make the decision. Do we want to live our life wholeheartedly in line with the five precepts is the question. And all religious traditions have a practice of ethical conduct. It's not just Buddhism. Even if we're not part of a religious tradition, we have our own ethical conduct. Sarika spoke about, you know, conventional morality, and that's where we decide, you know, what we think is ethical and what we don't think is ethical. So we all have it. But the difference is, as Bodhileda has pointed out, that, you know, these precepts in the Buddhist tradition haven't been given by some god above. And if we break them, we're not going to burn in hell. Okay? That's the difference. So, my question is, are we choosing to settle for... So, I may get angry sometimes, but hey, we all do. And I don't kill people, so I'm okay. Or, well, everyone makes free calls on work cell phones, or does the odd bit of photocopying, or eats that grape in the supermarket. So, what's there to worry about? So, I have the odd drink. I don't get drunk or do anything unskillful, so what's the issue? Yeah, I crave or lust after people sometimes, but I don't act on it. It's not affecting anyone else. Or are we settling for, well, since I came across the Dharma, my life has changed and I'm much more ethical, much happier. And so settling for all of this is okay. But if we're going to settle for that, let's just admit it, that that's what we're choosing to settle for. Okay? However, we may really want to deepen our spiritual practice, and by doing this, we have to continually raise the bar. So yes, while the precepts are training principles to train our minds, perhaps we can ask ourselves, how long do we want to be in training for? When an athlete stops training, their performance declines. Today, we are exploring Kamesu Michachara Veremini Sikkhapadam Samadhiyami. I undertake to abstain from sexual misconduct. With stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I purify my body. We need to explore this precept with compassion and honesty. Sexual misconduct takes life literally and sucks out the life of many human beings. People who have been the target of sexual misconduct have suffered deeply, sometimes suffering throughout their whole life. Sexual misconduct harms life and is interconnected with breaking all the other precepts. This precept can be a bag of worms for queer people. This is because in many religions, including Buddhism, homosexuality has been condemned. It is considered by many religions as sexual misconduct. People are killed because of homosexuality, put in prison, queer bashed. They lose their jobs. Sometimes they lose their children. And many of these things apply to our culture here in the West and in Britain. Bless Queen Victoria's socks for not being aware that two women could have sexual relationships with each other. This is the only reason there wasn't a law made against us. And although we have a more tolerant Queen of England, Elton John... I stole that from the gay boys. There are still people in our society who consider our sexuality to be sexual misconduct. So what does that mean for us? Well, often we develop internalized homophobia. Perhaps even believe that maybe it is sexual misconduct. For some of us, it may mean staying in the closet to protect our jobs and our family. Let's drop this weight now and move on. Homosexuality, being lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, is not sexual misconduct. It is a false view built on the separation of self. When people condemn it as sexual misconduct, they are perceiving themselves as separate from us. Homosexuality, like gender, is on a spectrum. And if you look in the animal kingdom, you will find a similar spectrum. When people fear, they move into aversion, which is a poison of the mind. In my continent of origin, Africa, homosexuality was part of the culture until the colonizer came along and tried to stamp it out. And the irony is that these archaic laws that Britain introduced into Africa still today keeps gay people in prison for years. Then, of course, there has been our own internalized oppression in the lesbian community. In the 80s, and I can remember hearing these debates and discussions, in the 80s, lesbian feminist separatists, and some of them were academics, argued if we penetrated a lover, this was acting out patriarchy, and so that was sexual misconduct. Of course, some people just strapped a dildo on and said, you know what? But it had an impact for some people. In the black queer communities, and actually in the black heterosexual communities, if you were seen to be with a white lover, you were perceived as sleeping with the enemy. And so this was another form of sexual misconduct. Again, another false view, built on fear, separation from others. As far as I know, there are no texts frowning upon homosexuality in the Pali canon, but don't quote me on that because I haven't read it from beginning to end. But what I do find interesting, that in all Buddhist traditions, there is the practice of celibacy, becoming an anagarika, the homeless one, the one who renounces all worldly things, including sex. In some traditions, only practitioners who have been celibate their whole life are considered fit enough to be at the helm. This is because once we enter into sexual relationships, we are prone to unskillfulness, open to vulnerability, complex projections, and unmet expectations. What sexual relationship have you been in and not acted unskillfully? I see the logic in the saying which says we should live three mountains away from our teacher. So, what does this third precept mean? What is sexual misconduct? In traditional Buddhist texts, sexual misconduct is any sexual act done by violence, coercion, physical or psychological pressure. Such sexual acts are irresponsible and are expressions of craving, violence, and disrespect. These acts include rape, adultery, illicit partners, sex with a child. So as you can see by this list, sexual misconduct is prevalent in our culture. The number one place where sexual abuse and sexual assault takes place is in our home. The second place is in the car. And the number one person who rapes us or sexually assaults us is by someone who we know. One in four women will be sexually assaulted, and actually it goes down for children. So what that means is that in this room there will be a percentage of us who have been a target of sexual misconduct. Often women are blamed for rape, sexual assault. We're told it's the way we dressed, it was the short skirt we were wearing, that sexy dress. But the fact is, the number one piece of clothing that the woman is assaulted in is jeans. So we can throw this weight off our shoulders. We are not to blame. Women are also told that if they had any feelings of pleasure during a sexual assault, then it is no longer sexual misconduct. And believe it or not, I read this in a modern Buddhist book. Another false view. The reality is that there are certain parts of the human anatomy that when touched, feelings of sexual arousal can arise. We are not in control of that. If we are the target of child abuse, sexual assault or rape, etc., there is no controller of the feelings. The person who touches us or the person who makes us touch a part of the sexual anatomy has committed sexual misconduct. It is time to put down the weight. We are not to blame. If you have been a target of any of these, then you were a target of sexual misconduct. Our part in this is not to identify with the experience, not to hold on to the pain of the story for years and years and years, and learn to protect ourselves by finding our voice and speaking out. If we don't, we are at risk of continually being assaulted. And this is really important because I have worked with so many females who carry the weight of of being the target of sexual misconduct. And for many women, that can be manifested through self-harm, through compulsive eating, through different kinds of eating disorder, through obsessive compulsive behaviours. The list is long. And we need to begin to put the weight down. So, sexual harassment is also a form of sexual misconduct. And I believe that it's my belief, but I believe every woman sometime in her life will experience some form of sexual harassment. What is sexual harassment? It's if we look at somebody's body in an inappropriate way. You know, can you remember when you were this child and you were free and then puberty came upon us and men started looking at you differently and it's almost like you had to begin to go like this. Yeah. Sexual fantasies about a person we are not in a sexual relationship is also sexual misconduct and, of course, taken and not given. Initiating sex with a partner who is asleep is also sexual misconduct and, of course, is taken and not given. So, on the topic of sexual misconduct, and we are on a queer retreat, I cannot avoid the topic of S&M, domination and submission. So, it's consensual, and so why should it be sexual misconduct? Because it is consensual, this does not erase the fact that there is an element of violence. There is also an element of craving. Many people who practice S&M are addicted to the endorphins that are triggered. What about one-night stands? I hated hearing what Thich Nhat Hanh had to say on this matter. But I knew deep down he was right. And, you know, I mean, I heard him speak about this about 12 years ago at Plum Village. And the essence of what I remember was he was just saying how precious our bodies are. And that is why when we have been assaulted or sexually abused, just how damaging it is. And that actually with one night stands, we're not respecting our bodies. And actually, I remember a friend saying to me, they said, you know, as soon as you mix fluids, that person's energy stays in your aura for quite a while, you know. And I must confess, it was really interesting that I can remember being in a car with friends and a friend saying, oh, you know, we were talking about your sexual partners, and they had said something like, oh, they've only had about 3 partners in their life. And, you know, she was about like 40 or something, and I was younger than her. I was like 32 or whatever. And I said, God, is that all? with disdain. And I talk about that a bit more with the other precept, but I made a decision just to see what it would be like to not drink for a year because of a particular job I was doing. And I remember just being aware at some point thinking, God, I've hardly slept with anybody. And then I realised it was because I'd been completely sober, and actually and all my one night stands had actually been under the influence of something. Not that I was completely wrecked, but, you know, maybe sometimes I was, but, you know, a lot that was, you know, but, you know, a glass of champagne or something, you get a bit looser, you know how it is. And actually it's also, you know, also the question of prostitution, which is a taboo subject, and it's not like I disagree with prostitution, but what I will say about it is that actually it's a form of sexual misconduct to ourselves, you know. And I have not met a woman yet who's worked in the sex industry who has done it clean, so that tells me something. Okay, I've not yet, and maybe I will do, and it would be really interesting to have that discussion. And I also know that it's a topic that people do not feel comfortable talking about. I met up with a friend quite recently, not somebody who was in the Sangha, who was just, that was the thing of still carrying the weight of that, and people still carry the weight of that. So it harms ourselves. So sexual is actually looking at that, actually sexual misconduct doesn't just harm another person, because, you know, if you work in the sex industry, you rarely harming the other person because they've paid for what they want, but you'll be harming yourself. Another topic, non-monogamy. Is it sexual misconduct? I mean, it's just really interesting, you know, when you look around and I feel quite fortunate because I grew up on that scene which was liberated. Everything was tried on the scene, and, you know, I'm part of that generation where some of my friends now live as men and are men. So, you know, it was drag kings, and then it got a bit more serious, and it was then transgendering, and, you know, the whole free sex, S&M, all that kind of stuff. And but for me, there was always like one person in that relationship where non-monogamy for them was they could sleep whoever they wanted to sleep with, and the other person was more monogamous, but then one day they met someone, you know, and then they wanted the other partner to continue. So they wanted 2 partners, and the other one didn't necessarily want 2 partners, they just wanted to sleep with people. And just people got harmed in it, people got hurt, people did get hurt in it. So, you know, somewhere in there, there is sexual misconduct. And non-monogamy can look in many different ways. You know, I mean, for myself, I was somebody who didn't really get into relationships, but I was non-monogamous. But, you know, often my non-monogamy was with people who were in relationships. And actually, I was guilty of harming other women, you know. So we do need to look at that. The whole thing of ménage à trois, multiple lovers. Well, in a way, it's a bit like multitasking. And I say, what is it like to eat Häagen-Dazs cookies and cream, green and black chocolate, and your favourite drink all at the same time? As Sarika says, to experience the preciousness of things, we must pay full attention to life. Is it possible when we have multiple lovers to pay full attention to life? I believe that we cannot be fully aware with all these people. And actually, I speak for myself, there's a part of craving and addiction and excitement in all of that, which is great, but we just have to acknowledge that. So Buddhist texts say that sexual activity should take place between two mutually consenting adult partners in a committed relationship and on the basis of love and respect. Sounds a bit boring, really, doesn't it? But if we are to have stillness, simplicity, and contentment, then I believe this is the way to go. Or be celibate, you know? That's the other option. And I know from my own experience, I've been in a committed relationship for 7 years, and I have never felt more stillness and more contentment and simplicity in my life since I've been in a committed relationship. So, you know, it's something for you to think about. And of course, I realised when I went through this, I thought, oh yeah, I haven't mentioned, what about masturbation? Is that sexual misconduct? Because actually some religions have actually said masturbation is sexual misconduct. We shouldn't touch ourselves. Well, the first thing I want to say is that actually, I don't know if you're aware, but the biggest accidental killer of young teenage boys in North America is the practice of hanging themselves and masturbating. It's a way they get a quick asphyxiation, a quick high. So, but of course, the curiosity of the body is healthy. It's natural. But of course, if we crave masturbation and it becomes an addiction, then perhaps there is a form of sexual misconduct somewhere in that. And you know, we know that actually, I think one of the first memories of being aware of inappropriate sexual behaviour was a man masturbating on the train as a kid. That was or opening a telephone box and a man masturbating. So it can be sexual misconduct, but it's not always sexual misconduct. So, I've focused on sex a lot, but this precept is also what we do with our energy that arises, that can lust after another person or latches onto another tangible object like food or a piece of clothing or that new technological toy. To work with this precept, we need to guard against the sense doors, set up the conditions so we can protect our children from sexual abuse, sexual assault, protect ourselves from sexual assault and unwanted sexual harassment. We must learn to love and respect ourselves while respecting the sexual wishes of our partners. When we are in relationship with someone, and we see an attractive person, or even if we are single and we see an attractive person, we have to learn to train the mind not to wander and daydream. We have to catch our mind. We have to watch what the mind does when we see somebody who's attractive. I've done it. I've seen somebody who's been attractive. I've married them, I've had their babies, and I've killed them off in the space of 5 minutes. And we have to watch it, that scenario playing out in our minds. We practice this precept so we can guard against greed, anger, and resentments. We cultivate self-restraint and mastery over our own emotions. If we want more stillness, simplicity, contentment in our lives, we will perhaps have to renounce some of the ways we have been behaving and learn to control our sexual desires.